Our last case this morning, as the attorneys get situated, is case 823-095, State of Minnesota versus Jacob Carl Smith.
Your Honors, as we're getting situated, I note that Judge Klopaki's nameplate is here, but Judge Dorkman's there, and Judge Dorkman and Klopaki. I only mention that because you probably don't know that.
I should, actually. It's written behind me, but I didn't pay attention.
Well, I have a feeling everyone knew the difference, but maybe we could just change the signs. So.
Well, since we're live streaming, I'd rather that I picture Judge Bjorklund in mine.
Thank you.
I just knew I was like...
Well, that's the case. I'd like Judge Bjorkman's nameplate in front of mine, so she's clearly the smartest person on the panel. Anyway. All right. As all parties are aware, the appellant will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Respondent will have 15 minutes. Then finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes of rebuttal. So, counsel for the appellant, whenever you're ready, you may begin, please.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Sean McCarthy. I'm an assistant Rice County attorney. I appear today on behalf of appellant, the state of Minnesota. The primary issue in this case for the court is to review this district court's denial of a continuance pre-swearing of the jury. Jeopardy is not yet attached. An essential witness, the only witness who could establish the element of identity, failed to respond to a lawfully served subpoena. The state asked the trial court to do three things. Number one, to find that witness in contempt. Number two, to issue a warrant to have that witness arrested and brought before the court. And number three, to continue the proceedings to a reasonable time to allow those things to happen. The trial judge basically said orally on the record, well, you know, you found that witness once before. You'll probably find them pretty quickly, so let's just go ahead. The problem with that is, and here's where the abuse of discretion happened, that's the trial court shifting the risk that that witness is not located onto the prosecution against the prosecution's will. And once jeopardy attaches, if that witness was not located, the whole case is gone. We have no way to ever establish our burden of proof and no way to ever come back and remedy that down the road. That's the unique facts of this particular case where the trial court...
I would ask the marshal to start the clock again. Thank you. Oh,
did I do something wrong?
No.
I don't want to get an extra 3 minutes on you, though. You don't want that. Trust me.
Believe me, we'll figure it out. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, the record is a little confusing because there had been an initial subpoena that was just served for show up between these 3 days for trial. And so then the first day of trial came and there was no witness. And I think at that point, the state served another subpoena and was able to serve this witness, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And so the challenge is on the second day when at 9 a.m. you had, in fact, served the subpoena again and that witness did not appear.
Exactly.
So I guess my first question is... the district court didn't deny a continuance the second time. The district court deferred the decision. I mean, if that's true, how is there a critical impact here?
Because deferring the decision is not granting the continuance. And the trial court expressly said, the specific quote, this is on page 10 of appellant's brief, so we'll go ahead with the trial at this point and deal with that issue when she becomes a witness. Trial court is basically saying, we're moving forward, no continuance. Deferring the decision was denial of the continuance, and the moment jeopardy attaches, as Your Honor just pointed out, the key here is we got a valid subpoena. That's the only mechanism by which you get people to show up at court. And the judge is basically saying, I'm not going to enforce the subpoena. I'm going to force you to move forward, and we'll deal with it later. But once jeopardy attaches, that's when the state's got critical impact and no way to overcome it. Does that address the court's question?
Well, I'm not so sure that you answered the court's question about the impact, about critical impact.
The critical impact is that the only way that the state can prove the elements of its case includes proving identity. And this particular
I share Judge Bjorkman and Judge Klopaki's concerns with how you read the transcript. and, you know, we all can read it our own ways, but what I thought the judge was doing was, okay, let's see if she shows up tomorrow, and then I'll make a decision then, and maybe the court could have issued a would have granted you a continuance, would have issued the subpoena. I mean, I didn't see the court foreclosing any of its options. It just said, I'm not going to issue the subpoena now. Let's see if she shows up. And if she showed up, I mean, they'd be fine, right? Because then she'd, you know, the witness would identify whatever you wanted her to do. So how is that interpretation of the events so crazy?
That's a reasonable interpretation from the perspective of if you were the trial judge yourself and trying to balance moving the case forward, but we've got to get this witness, and, well, you know, they found her the night before. Odds are they'll probably find her again. It's about assignment of risk. The trial court erred by forcing the state to take the risk, because if the state, let's say the person absconded, took off to another state, we couldn't find that person. Well, if jeopardy's already attached, there's no remedy to fix that. That's where the judge, the trial court, was forcing the state to take that risk.
Did the court say after this colloquy that I'm going to swear in the jury right here and now?
That's where they're at in the trial, and it's part of the transcript. It's leading right up to that. They're about to go forward.
But, I mean, the court didn't, what I'm saying is the transcript doesn't indicate, and now let's bring in the jury and swear them in, right? I mean, that would have been the next step, but the court could have not done that and just sworn them in tomorrow, and, you know, waiting to see, well, what's happening? Is the witness coming? Am I going to have to issue a subpoena? You know, am I going to tell the jury to come back tomorrow? I mean, I don't see any of those scenarios being foreclosed by the statement. So we'll go ahead with the trial at this point and deal with that issue when she becomes a witness. I mean, you know, one could have asked, so are you going to swear the jury in now, Your Honor? And if he or she said, yes, I am, well, then I think it's a different ball game.
Same page of the transcript and a few pages later, this exact discussion happened. And the issue of attachment of jeopardy was expressly raised by the trial attorney, the prosecutor at stake here. That's where that comes from here. It's not well developed because they weren't articulating it the way the court is articulating it, but it's well developed in the sense that that was the next step. They had finished picking the jury. And if you're going to go forward with the trial, the next step is you swear the jury and call your witnesses.
What time of the day was this?
I don't remember the exact time, Your Honor. I know that it was far enough into the morning, and this is second day. They had already been picking on the first day. They're ready to swear the witness, and I believe the transcript accurately and fully reflects that.
For the jury, you mean?
For the jury, yes. And indeed, the key here is the argument that jeopardy is about to attach was presented to this trial judge. And despite that, the trial judge went forward. What would have been different if the trial judge had just said, as Judge Connolly has just suggested, if the trial judge had said, you know, we're going to deal with some other preliminary matters, and I want to take a break for an hour here, and then we'll revisit this prior to the jury being sworn. If there was some discussion of that, then I wouldn't be here on appeal, because they wouldn't have needed to do an immediate interlocutory pretrial appeal.
Well, that's what had happened the day before, basically.
Yes, the day before. And the remedy at that time, though, was they went out and served the
subpoena.
Person. Exactly.
And the subpoena required the witness to be there at 9 a.m. on
Correct.
This day. And
one
so
of the,
this colloquy and the motion and the deference or the deferral of the ruling on the motion occurred after that 9 a.m. report to court on
Correct.
The subpoena.
Correct. And important here is this is the relationship between the defendant and the victim. This is a domestic case. This
well,
is
and the witness who failed to appear the first day and I guess the second day at least at 9 a.m. wasn't expected to implicate the defendant other than to say he was at my apartment on this day.
Correct.
Just
Very,
identity.
As you've all seen in your prior practice and in appeals, the that component of domestic cases makes the challenging, or makes it more challenging in the trial and the lineup of those witnesses. That's part of why the normal witness subpoena saying, be ready to go on such and such a day, was found invalid the first time around on day one. And so a time-specific, day-specific subpoena was served that night for the next morning, yet the witness failed to appear. That's the risk that was being shifted onto the prosecutors. Well, gee, if this person has twice failed to show up, now we're taking a risk that law enforcement finds that person at some point before the trial ends. That's the risk that was inappropriately shifted onto the prosecutor. Prosecutor could have decided, yes, we'll go forward and we'll take that risk, but the trial court can't force that risk. That's where the abuse of discretion occurs. The secondary issue here is the amendment to the complaint. I'd address the court to the fact that this is a sentencing, 609.11, three-year mandatory minimum sentencing for use of a dangerous weapon. The state filed that 4 days before the trial. On the day of, first day of trial was the denial of that amendment, so this is May 22nd, 2023. The trial judge essentially treated as though it was a probable cause substantive part of the offense, rather than a sentencing portion of the statute, and determined that
there would be some factual determinations that would need to be made and defenses would change. Why isn't this more like the Baxter case?
In fact, Baxter supports the state here, Your Honor. The state's position on appeal is that Baxter points out that it is, in fact, a sentencing offense. Perry versus State from the Supreme Court said the same. 609.11 is a sentencing component, not a substantive element of the underlying offense. In light of that, when you read Baxter and Perry together, you reach the result that this is more akin to a housekeeping amendment. I will agree with Judge Klopacki that this does implicate other steps that need to be done. The jury instructions need to be changed a little bit. There's some extra findings and steps the jury and the parties need to address. And it does implicate the appellant, but the remedy is not just to throw it out. The remedy is to grant a continuance so that any prejudice that the defense might have is remedied by that continuance, because this is all pretrial before the jury's sworn. Again, the ample law in that regard, it's well addressed in the brief. Accordingly, the state would submit that the
trial... to the trial court that a continuance might be appropriate if the amendment was granted?
Your Honor, I apologize. I can't honestly say whether that's in the transcript or not. I don't remember that piece off the top of my head. And my apologies to this panel for not having that detail of the preparation at my fingertips. I do know, Your Honor, that it was argued amply to the court that there was no surprise to the defendant, because defendant in this case committed the current offense while he was on trial for a different second-degree assault. This particular defendant amply knew that he had a prior. He was in the middle of a trial when he committed this offense for that prior. According to the unique facts of this case are such that any prejudice that the defendant might have claimed could have been amply remedied through a continuance. With that, unless the panel has additional questions, I would yield the remainder of my time on direct.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Mr. McCarthy, we'll now hear for counsel for the respondent, please.
May it please the court, counsel. I am Melvin Welch, W-E-L-C-H, on behalf of the respondent. Your honors, I was trying to get a good idea of how this analysis should be done, because this is that time at trial where it's fairly confusing, fairly chaotic, number of different issues that are being caused, and notably not by the defendant or the respondent in this case. This is by actions of the state. And what the standard of review is that, so State versus Vance looks at the discretion of the trial court in managing its trial calendar, in managing issues such as continuance, and says it has broad discretion. And in that broad discretion, it can't be arbitrary, it can't be unreasoning. what appellant is arguing is that, okay, the trial court abused its discretion because by not granting, and I would not equate, as the appellant does, the lack of granting the continuance request at the time with denying it. Just like not granting it is, or not ruling on it at the moment is not granting it, is also not denying it at that moment. But that denial, or that lack of granting at the time, essentially was prejudicing the outcome.
Well, it's kind of a de facto denial, isn't it? Because once jeopardy attaches and that witness doesn't show up and you haven't let me get a continuance.
Continuance is available at that time, though, Your Honor. I mean, it's inconvenient. Obviously, there's a jury here. But as the record shows and as the district court judge said, the state, you have other witnesses. You have the medical witness. You have the neighbor. You have law enforcement that came to take the report. We hadn't even started the trial yet. There are a number of witnesses available to the state at that time, and they still had the opportunity because they knew where she lived. They knew where she worked.
They'd served her with a subpoena. And I guess I'm just saying, what's the functional difference? Because the court had everything it needed, the proper service of a subpoena, the failure to respond to the subpoena. I mean, it seems the next logical thing would be issue the warrant and bring the witness in.
I'm not saying you're not logical, Your Honor. I think that is a reasonable extension of analysis, but it's also reasonable when considering the district court's broad discretion in managing its trial calendar and seeking to fulfill the efficiency.
But is it reasonable for the trial court to let this all kind of hang around here in limbo and have jeopardy attach?
Well,
it looks like the court was right up to that point of swearing in the jury, was it not?
I don't disagree with that. I think that it looked like the jury was ready to go. They had been picking it the day before. One of the things I think the court is doing here, which it's supposed to do in looking at whether or not to grant the continuance, is this delay within the state's control? So when we look back at this subpoena, firstly, we had a subpoena that was issued two and a half months prior to the trial date. And this is a 9-month-old case coming to trial. So there had been no speedy demand. State had all the time necessary to get its ducks in a row, and they had issued the subpoena back in March to this woman to saying, okay, on May 22nd and May 23, you have to show up at some time to be determined. And at first they're saying to the district court, we want you to arrest her. And so this whole issue starts with a fairly significant request to the district court, please let us arrest this witness who's committed no crime for not showing up on this day, at this time, when there is neither a day nor time specified.
At so this point, the victim had, the quote victim, had change of heart as well, right?
Well, I don't know, and I can't speak to the underlying facts. From what is discussed in the record, and I have no reason to think that the defense attorney is being dishonest here, he's saying, Your Honor, and that's also because it's corroborated by the state in the May 23rd transcript. Your Honor, the state is asking to arrest a witness who's never provided an incriminatory statement against the defendant, neither immediately after, nor in a subsequent follow-up to the police, nor in a subsequent follow-up to the prosecution. And I think there was even one more statement that was provided. And none of these statements had she provided an inculpatory
She had acknowledged that, in fact, your client was in her apartment at the time that someone reported hearing this fighting and witnessing, although not able to identify her client. I mean, I think that's the piece is just, yes, he was in my apartment. Now, she denied the report. I get that. But
And I think you're speaking to what the state was looking to call her for was just to show that she's in the apartment, which is that's where there's an interesting aspect to this because presumably the state then is going to be calling this witness. So there's problems with the witness that is apparent to everyone early on in the case. And the witness doesn't want the defendant to be prosecuted. It's a domestic, I think we're all familiar with how those things go. But it's known to all of them there's problems with this case. And the state has to get out a proper speed and doesn't do it, et cetera, we're past that.
Right, we're on the second day of trial, yeah. We've got a properly served subpoena, and yep. We have a witness who has not appeared at the 9 a.m. report time.
And I think what was a concern here to the district court, it's part of that management of the case. This is a known difficult witness who presumably is going to be called for impeachment. And that's what was a concern articulated district court. Counsel, you know, I don't remember exact page. Counsel, you know, you can't call a witness just for the sole purpose of impeachment. And, well, Your Honor, we're not calling this witness to give any information regarding an alleged assault. We're just calling it for the identification of the person at the location on the night. Now, I haven't seen whether or not there was actual statement that he was there at that time. It appears from the record that there may have been, and so I have no reason to discount it. But that does lead the court some concern that, all right, it appears that in this difficult witness scenario, we're looking at somebody who's potentially going to get called solely for the purpose of impeachment, which is another consideration to look at when the court is saying, all right, how am I going to analyze this request for continuance? So we have time. The court's looking at it. We have time still. They have additional witnesses. They have the ability to locate this witness. At first, they gave a bad subpoena. They corrected the bad subpoena. When they were going to get her re-subpoenaed, and I'm now on May 22nd, the court says, or the appellant tells the court, well, we know she has to meet with probation tomorrow morning. Well, they don't even wait till the next morning. They go and find her that evening. They know where she works. So know where she works. She knows where she's going to be in the morning. They know where she lives. And they've had all this time to get their ducks in a row, and they haven't. And now we're at the day of trial. We just had a hearing with all the parties the week preceding. No notice was given that there was going to be any witness problems at the time, although everybody knows at this point there's a difficult witness. And on second to that, not at the hearing the week before, but the day after, the state decides to change the complaint to add not a sentencing enhancement. And I have to correct the appellant here, Your Honor. In Perry, the court did not find that it was a sentencing enhancer. The court affirmed the district court based on NAFLA that the issue should have been raised before. The court never made the determination that the 60911 subdivision 4 was merely sentencing enhancement. And in fact, under Blakely, that case Perry was pre-Blakely, we know that requires proof to the court to the jury. That means that the defendant has a right and needs to consider how is he going to manage for this case. Am I going to attempt to disprove what could be a conviction already to a jury? It's a difficult task, but that is still a defendant's right to pursue it that way. So it's not a mere housekeeping amendment. And the Perry does not support that assertion, so I don't have much more to put on that. But it goes to that continuous request. And right now, with Vance, and I don't have all the citations, it's in my brief, Your Honor, who is in control of this issue? This is not like Stroud, where the BCA was still working on DNA evidence. We all know that takes months to do, and the state can only push it so fast. BCA's got its, and that's a reasonable thing to request. This is a situation with getting the witness there. State knows the witness is a problem. State knows that there's potentially going to be calling the witness for impeachment, and the state's not even issuing a proper subpoena. Now the next day is around. So
when was the trial date set?
May 22nd.
No, I know, but when was that date selected? Do you know?
I don't know precisely, but I would presume at least before the March subpoena was issued, Your Honor, because they did have the May 22nd date at that time. And I would submit that, and you know, I think the state said it maybe erroneously, but Freud also says it sometimes subconsciously, we say what's on our mind. The state says the critical impact in this case, once the jury was sworn, then the critical impact occurs. And I don't disagree with the state on that. Before trial ends, I think it was one of the judges, I can't remember, a few judges, the opportunity to call the witness before trial ends. That continuance opportunity still exists. We have seen plenty of cases where serious trials are occurring and the court has to grant a continuance in the middle of the trial to go and bring somebody in who hasn't appeared on a subpoena. And even in this case, Your Honor, the court had issued the warrant. I mean, there was a bit of the fight over that the day before, but then the day of the trial, with the jury ready to come in, the judge said, okay, I'm going to issue the warrant. She wasn't here at 9. It's 9:30 now. Issue a warrant. Go ahead and find your witness, but at the same time, we're moving forward. We got a trial calendar. We have, I don't know how many others were on the trial calendar, but this defendant alone had three different cases that were pending before the court, which the defense attorney had indicated on the 22nd If this one doesn't go forward, let me know. We'll go forward with a different one. My client has the right to have these hearings held. And while it's not recognized as prejudice, I don't think under case law, I don't think I can make that argument, but he's in the DOC custody. He has different programming that's available to him, and he can't move forward because he has to address these different issues that are outstanding. So while not making a prejudicial argument, I guess I am, there is some prejudice to the defendant here. And that's why he's trying to keep the case going.
What's the status of this case now?
Well, it's on pretrial appeal to this court. Sorry, Your Honor, I'm not trying to be smart.
I understand that, but we still have we have an unsworn jury out there. Is that what we have?
I would not think so. The court.
We have a selected jury out there of some kind, right?
We have a selected jury out there that was dismissed. In the transcript, at least, the court said this that we have these.
So
issues.
The jurors were dismissed.
I think so. I can't imagine they're going to call back those same jurors, Your Honor. I mean, it would be so inefficient.
Well, if they don't come, you can get a warrant for them.
That is true, Your Honor. I mean, I appreciate the levity. But I want to just quickly, Your Honor, before I see my time's running out, I don't have much to say, but I think the district court was very reasonable here in his analysis of how this. He's looking at who has control over this delay. He's looking at what's being done. He looks at what he has in his the appellant has to show a clear abuse of discretion in what is very broad discretionary powers in managing his trial calendar. And he has put the case off by a day. Even just in allowing...
Let me go back to my question again.
Oh, yes,
Your Honor.
The
status of this case. If we concluded that this appeal did not have merit and we would affirm the trial court, I gather, then you're all going back to get a new jury. Is that it?
Maybe. I can't say for sure, Your Honor. And one of the reasons I think that the district court will have to analyze is, I guess, what this court decides. Was it at critical impact time? I would submit to the court it was not. The jury had not been sworn in. The continuance could have been granted after the jury was sworn in. And at that point, yes, it would have had a critical impact. Is this request for coming in and dealing with this issue before the Court of Appeals...
That it has no critical impact, and therefore appellant loses. What do you do then? You go back and have a trial, right?
Then it's a little bit of a clear question. Yeah, I think you would go back to trial. I guess that goes to the critical impact then. It's still available. The trial it's still available to them to do what they want. It's still available to get the witnesses. So that kind of shows that there was no critical impact here. And I think there needs to be an analysis, at least from my experience when I got the hammer once at district court as a young prosecutor, where there was a case was dismissed, I took it up and then recharged it. The court said, you can't do that. And there was analysis. I can't think of the case.
Conversely, if we concluded that the trial court should have granted a continuance or done something, it goes back again for a new jury trial. So I'm trying to figure out either way we'd go. Is it goes back for a scheduled jury trial, does it not?
I'm trying to think of an answer where I could tell you no, that this court would direct the district court that it is not critical impact and that that this this delay, which was caused by the state prior to it being critical impact, would...
No, whether it's critical impact or not. One way or another, this case is going to go back to the trial court to do something with it, right?
I would agree. Yes, Your Honor. I think no matter what this court decides, it has to go back to a trial court for one way or the other.
You're kind of making it easy for us. Either way we go, the impact on everybody is going to be the same. Which leads me to ask the question, why are we here?
That's where Your Honor, I keep saying
it's a rhetorical question. I didn't expect
okay. Sorry. Well, if the court has no other questions for me, then I will cede the remainder of my time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Welsh. Mr. McCarthy, you'll have the last word, sir.
Thank you. Your Honors, the question that came up earlier about the amendment to the complaint and whether the continuance remedy was brought to the trial court, I was able to find that. Transcript from May 22nd, page 37, lines 17 and 18. The prosecutor specifically argued the remedy here, if the court has any kind of arguments or issues with the amended complaint...
Grant the complaint amendment and grant the continuance.
Correct. which lines up nicely with also, and by the way, we also need a continuance because our witness is not responding to a subpoena. And I want to pick up on that point. The key here, counsel was just being questioned about, well, gee, will under what scenario would we not go back and have this be a jury trial again in front of this judge? If the judge had said, as Judge Connolly was kind of suggesting, if the judge had said, I'm going to defer my ruling for now, but before we swear the jury, I will grant a ruling on the continuance and give you a chance to decide if you're going to appeal or not. That's not how it happened in this case, but that would be the kind of scenario where you might have some different outcome. But here, again, based on the record, they were moving forward with the trial. The next logical step in the trial was to swear the jury and start calling witnesses. And indeed, the trial court specifically commented, you have other witnesses you can call first. Well, to call any witness, you got to swear the jury first. So they were about to swear the jury. Hence, the prosecutor filed the appeal. One other point here, there was some argument by counsel.
Even if the court, let's say you're right, and your version of the transcript is, he was going to swear them in, you were going to deal with other witnesses. That still doesn't foreclose the district court, even at that point, from granting a continuance to go find this woman, right?
That's correct, except the problem with it is it's missing the point that I've argued earlier, assignment of risk. The risk that they don't find the missing witness, that would be borne by the prosecution losing its case in chief, because this witness was an essential witness, not called for impeachment.
Well, that strikes me as one possibility. Another is that it looks to me like the prosecution wants to control the trial court's calendaring.
I would respectfully disagree. There is absolutely nothing in this record that suggests that. And if anything, when you read the transcript, I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't quite hear what you said. There are appellate decisions, not this case, but appellate decisions that reference that concern, but the records in those cases tend to include, comments by the prosecutor, well, judge, if you're not going to give me my continuance, I'm going to file an appeal so I get a continuance. That is not the record in this case, and I will strongly argue that to this court, that it would be inappropriate to stretch those facts into this case when that's not supported here. There's nothing here but good faith on the part of the prosecutor, including a good showing of that is the fact that on day one, witness doesn't show up, and there's an argument about the sufficiency of the subpoena. So the state went out and served a corrected subpoena that night with a date and time-specific appearance date, and the witness still didn't show up. If those are not the facts upon which to grant a continuance to order the arrest and the apprehension of the missing witness, under what scenario could the state ever get a witness in? That's the process we use, the subpoena statute.
And the district court, in fact, on the 23rd, did issue a warrant, right?
That's correct. The problem is a warrant without a continuance to allow the warrant to be served, the person to be apprehended, for the parties to reasonably figure out what's going on and when the person is. It's a warrant, but jeopardy is still about to attach. The same concern that we discussed earlier. Unless there are additional questions, I've covered the pieces I wanted to cover on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. McCarthy, the matter is submitted. We will be issuing our decision in 90 days. That being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned.
All right.